Hi, I'm Marian McPartland. My guest today on Piano Jazz is the legendary guitarist Les Paul, and he's famous not only as a musician, but as an inventor of all types of electronic equipment used by musicians all over the world. In short, Les is a contributor to the music world of gigantic proportions. Les, I just want to start right with like what you're doing now, because it's only a short time ago I came down to hear you at the Iridium in New York City, and I think it's what you do there every Monday night is just fantastic. I mean, you not only pack the room, but seeing all those people all standing on the stairs to get your autograph, doesn't that make you feel wonderful to have that happening?
Yeah, it does. At my age, you know, I didn't think anybody wants to come out and see a moldy fig.
But you're not a moldy fig.
Well, that's why I'm on this show, is because you're so complimentary and nice. Yeah.
No, but I mean, a moldy fig is somebody that only
plays.
Let's
face it. Now, we've been in the business for a good many years. You not as long as me.
Well, let's not get into that.
but then again, I had a lot of time to think up things and invent things, and a lot of time to say what I had to say with the guitar.
But what's so incredible is you're still saying it. You're still out there.
I'm mumbling more now than I used to. But yes, that's the fun of playing, is to say something.
Well,
it?
I'm sure you look forward to doing that thing at the Iridium. And, I mean, watching you, I know you do, because people love it and you love doing it. And I enjoyed sitting in, as a matter of fact. So.
Well, when you sat in the other night, what makes it so wonderful working with you? And it's been a long time since we've done that. And a lot of piano players and musicians have been sitting in down at the Iridium.
Yeah, I bet they have.
And the wonderful part about you and I playing together has been that we don't get in each other's way. We have a way of listening and playing, and we share this thing back and forth. And you're in no hurry to get there, and I'm in no hurry to get there, besides our age now. Just thinking about playing.
Well, that's the art of... Of course, I've been doing this two-piano thing for a long time, but, I mean, it works with any instruments, with piano and guitar, and I think that's really the secret, is if people say, like, how do you play two pianos or how do you accompany somebody, it's just not getting in the other person's way and not trying to
and
go...
And yet, saying...
All over the place. But meanwhile... I think before we talk anymore, we should just put all this stuff we're talking about into practice and let's play something together.
Hmm.
So,
should we start out real slow, like?
Whatever you want to do, Les.
All right. You want me to start it?
Yeah.
The only thing I'll tell you is in A minor.
Well, okay.
Thank you.
You know, that sounded so nice, and at that tempo, I mean, that's really a sort of a relaxing, nice tempo. And if we didn't announce it, but I guess everybody would know that that's George Gershwin's Summertime. But I guess what everybody doesn't know is that we have these wonderful musicians with us that are part of your group, Les. So will you introduce them?
Sure. Paul Nowinski is playing the bass, and Lou Paula is playing the rhythm guitar.
It's wonderful. I'd love to play with a group like this more often.
That'd be nice, yeah.
It's really a kick. Yeah. Well, I'm trying to think, how did you get started on the guitar? I mean, were you a child prodigy, or did your parents?
No, I was none of that.
Well, how did you ever get started playing the guitar?
Well, okay. This is kind of interesting because the beginning of my career in the music business was pretty strange. My mother and father had built a home in Waukesha, Wisconsin, on St. Paul Avenue.
Yeah.
It's Les Paul Avenue. Can you believe that?
I can. I would
and
think
they named the whole highway that, and they got a guitar, and the neck of it points to which direction to go in, north, south.
That's fabulous.
Yeah, and it's a Les Paul guitar in my hometown.
Well, yeah. I mean, you're worthy of things like that. I'm sure you have a lot of that.
Here's how it started. I was sitting on the front porch, and I think I must have been 6, 7 years old, and they hadn't put the stairs in yet. And they were putting the sewer in, and the two sewer diggers broke for lunch. And he dug out the harmonica out of his dinner pail, started to play the thing. And I jumped off of that porch, and I went down and stared him out of that harmonica. I was so intrigued with it. And he says, "Here, kid, you can have it." And he gave it to me.
And you'd never played one before?
I'd never played one. As I reached for it, a hand came in front of me, and it was my mother's. She says, "You don't blow this till I boil it." Right? And that was so important. I've been boiling everything since.
Well, as long as we don't boil the guitar before.
Oh, I'll boil anything before I blow on it. Okay.
But that's how you got playing a harmonica.
Yeah.
And then how long before you...
But then the harmonica, I started to hear blues players on the harmonica on the radio. And radio was thin in those days.
Yeah.
You had to really get out there and look for a station.
I mean, we're going
music.
We're going to the 20s, maybe?
Yes, it was in the 20s. Let me say 26.
Yeah.
And at that time, I started playing the harmonica. And my mother said, "You know, you're fine, but there's just your foot in the harmonica. And when you sing, you got nothing going for you but the foot and your voice." And she says, "Why don't you try an instrument along with it?" So I tried a sax. So she said, "Stupid, you got a sax in your mouth, can't play the harmonica. We can't hear you sing." So my mother eliminated that in a hurry. So I went to the piano, and I started to play the piano and the harmonica. Now my back is turned to the audience, and my mother says, well, they don't have a piano everywhere. You can't throw that in the back seat of a car.
Well, your mother was
pretty hip. I didn't have that in mind anyway.
She was pretty hip, wasn't she?
Oh, she was hip, and I got hip pretty fast. And so I went to a banjo. When I got to the banjo and the harmonica, it was harsh. It wasn't as sweet. It didn't have all the things going for it. And finally, my mother guided me into the guitar. And not hardly knowing what I was doing, I sent to Sears and I got the guitar. And when I unpacked that thing, one of the strings got caught in the cardboard when I was taking out the package, and a note goes like that. It rings, goes like that. And my mother walks in and hugs me and says, Les, you're playing great already. Right? I just got the string and a piece of cardboard.
Oh,
but
love it.
I knew that the guitar, even if you, no matter what you do, if you just play it, just plunk a note on it, it's sweet. Well, when I got this guitar from Sears and Roebuck, and my mother is raving how great I play and everything, and I'm at this barbecue stand halfway between Waukesha and Milwaukee, and a fellow was in the rumble seat of this car. And now this is in the later 20s, let's say 27, 28. And he wrote a note and said, Red.
Oh, you were Rhubarb Red.
I was Red Hot Red. I hadn't even got to Rhubarb
Oh,
yet.
All I remember was Rhubarb Red. So you were Red Hot Red. I'm sorry.
And I sang country songs.
Oh, God.
And this was a frustrating time in my life because I was torn between Coleman Hawkins and Earl Hines and Roy Eldridge. And I'm listening to Scoops. I'm listening to all these great players.
But you're singing country music.
And I'm singing country music.
Man.
So I would go to these barbecue stands and play. And when I finished at night, I would be dialing the radio to hear from the Grand Terrace.
Oh,
and
Earl
Hines. Earl Hines with Coleman Hawkins.
Yeah.
And I was torn between two types of music, jazz and country. And as I went along, I says, now, which am I going to do? Which direction? I can't go both. So I used the name Rhubarb Red in the daytime, and at night I was with the Coleman Hawkins and the Lester Youngs playing jazz.
So you managed to keep both things going.
Yes, and I would make $1,000 a week playing country and $5 a week playing jazz.
Well, here I'm always telling all the young kids coming up that they should just... If they
play
want to
country.
Play jazz. No. I always tell them they should play jazz if they're motivated to do that, you know. But
well, today there is more jazz out there and it's being accepted a lot more. But in the old days, we had to fight every inch of the way to play jazz.
Well, you played with so many different people. I'm like, I'm trying to think your first group years ago, like a jazz
well,
group.
Well, I did the first jazz at the Philharmonic.
Right.
That was with Shorty Nadine. That was our Nat Cole.
Oh, how exciting.
And Nat Cole and I played the first jazz. That was with Illinois Jacquet. Well,
probably in the 50s.
It was very hard for me to make the decision to leave country music because of the tremendous amount of money that you could make doing that. In Chicago, I had to be on three different stations singing these country songs.
What did you sing?
Oh, I sang stupid songs. I didn't do like a Gene Autry or... In fact, I took Gene Autry's place. When he left WJJD,
had a radio. That radio show was that when you were Rhubarb Red?
That was Rhubarb Red.
Yeah, because
and then you know I would be jamming at the Three Deuces with Tatum, and Roy Eldridge, and I says I got to leave you guys. I got to go to work. You know, it's 4:30.
Oh God.
So Tatum says, where the hell is he going to work at 4:30? So he figured I worked in the post office. You know. So Roy says, hey, you got to hear this. So Roy, that morning, they tuned in the radio station. I come on yodeling and singing with my guitar. And he says, that's a guy that was sitting down here, you know, playing Liza.
Well, you're not going to yodel tonight, are you?
I only do that now when I'm in trouble.
Well, you're not in trouble here, believe me. I just think this is the most fun I've had in a long time, because actually what I'd like to do is really play another tune, because...
Oh, you would?
Is that all right?
Sure, it's all right.
Well, how about Deed I Do?
Could you Thank God, that's what I wrote down.
Yeah, well, I was going to play it anyway.
Good for you.
I was just hoping that you were going to go along with that.
Oh, I'll go with it.
So you want to start it out?
Sure.
And then I'll fall in somewhere.
I hope it's fast.
Boy, it's a neat ending.
My thumbs won't go where I want them to go.
Well, it sounds like everything's going in the right direction. I was going to put one note, and then I thought, no, better leave well alone. It's just going to end nicely, and it did.
I remember when I had a problem because I played too many notes. Now I'm down to one note, and I'm having a tough time making a decision which one that one should be. By the time I think about it, it's gone.
Well, I don't know. I think you could choose fewer, maybe better. But anyway. Well, more talk and music in a minute. But first, I want to let you know that my guest is Les Paul with Lou Paolo and Paul Nowinski. I'm Marian McPartland, and this is Piano Jazz, made possible in part by a grant from the National Endowment for the Arts. I would really just like to know, what was the first thing you invented? I mean, we're going way back.
The first thing was the electric guitar.
I mean, you
sure was.
You invented that.
I did, in Waukesha, Wisconsin. I have it home. And the tailpiece was a door hinge, a barn door hinge.
You're kidding.
Yeah, and the pickup was off of a telephone.
You're amazing. You're probably the only guy in the world that is not only a player, but you invented half of this stuff. Well,
lots of people play and invent.
Well, I think before we talk anymore, we should just play something. What would you like to do? Or do you want me to suggest
something?
Can't
get started?
Oh, that'd be lovely.
Okay.
That'd be great. You know, that's such a great tune, and I think I probably learned that when I was still in England before I ever came over here. I think I learned all these great tunes from the BBC, and you probably heard Bunny Berrigan play that, or did you play it before?
No, I was in New York with Fred Waring's Pennsylvanians when I heard Bunny when he did that thing. I remember we used to hang out at Kelly's Stables. Do you remember that?
I remember hearing about it. I never was actually there. I think it was gone by the time I got to New York. But that was a famous place, wasn't it?
Oh, my goodness. When we hear things like Bunny Berrigan play such a classic thing as he played, and a million players try to be as good as he was then.
You know, you've got such a wonderful group here. It's such a kick for me to get to play with your rhythm section and think you have this every Monday night.
Cool it a little bit, otherwise they'd be hitting me for more money.
Well, I'm sure they're deserving of the best, you know.
It's okay. It's okay.
But I'd love to hear you do something. Something I really love, one of these good old tunes that I used to play with Jimmy. I Found a New Baby. Will you do
really?
That? Yeah,
I don't know if these hands will go there anymore, but I'll try.
Well, give it a shot.
Well, you better come in and help me, though, with it. Would you do that? Would you come in and just plunk something out so that there won't be holes all over this?
All right, whatever you say.
Okay, Del.
Found a New Baby. I think that's another tune I learned off the BBC. How did you ever learn these tunes? Just from hearing them? You just by osmosis, or you never saw the sheet music?
Well, if you went to get the sheet music, like Arts Music Store in Milwaukee, they had the sheet music. So I would bum a ride with my brother, who drove a Model T truck.
Wow.
And so he would give me a ride in, and then I would go to the music store, and someone like Gene Austin would be playing the piano and selling the sheet music.
Gene Austin did that?
Yes.
Oh, my God.
He played the dime stores, and he played the music stores. And,
oh, my goodness.
And it maybe took 2 years for them to get a hit record with My Blue Heaven or Ace in the Hole or whatever the song was. See, those things, you didn't have that over in Great Britain?
I guess so, but I was too young and naive and callow. I mean, I didn't know anything about anything. And I remember when Fats Waller coming to England and appearing at the Palladium. And, I mean, I didn't think about going. I just knew my parents wouldn't let me go.
Did you have a player piano over there?
I had a regular piano.
But not a player piano?
No, I had a what was then in those days a gramophone.
Well, my mother had a player piano, and she'd want me to come home and pump it. And then I would go into Milwaukee and get these piano rolls of Fats Waller. And then I would sit down and learn to play the stride piano with the left hand, and I could figure out exactly what Fats Waller was doing.
Oh, goodness.
And so I would do that, and then finally came up with the first multi-track recording was actually on a piano roll.
Really?
Yeah.
Because you invented that thing, didn't you?
Well, I invented the recording, But way back at the beginning, it all started in a living room with the piano, player piano, and with the Victrola, which is like your gramophone over there with the crank.
Yes.
And I only got the crank on Wednesday night if I was good. And oh, I did all my chores. I got the crank on Wednesday.
Oh, you mean your mother would take the crank out of the gramophone?
She'd uncrank that thing.
Oh, my goodness,
and, lock it up. And I only got it if I was good. If I mowed the lawn and weeded the garden, did everything, then I could get the crank. And when I got the crank, of course, then I got the player piano, I got the telephone, I have the radio, and I have a microphone. I have everything, the guitar, the harmonica. I don't have to leave. I got Fats Waller. I've got everything right there.
God, that's
and
fantastic.
That's how I learned. Sure.
Well, now, I keep wanting to get you to do a tune with your great trio and let me sit and listen to it. So why don't you do one? Like, oh, and really nice tune, Someday, Sweetheart.
Oh, okay.
Could you do that?
Of course I would.
Great. All right, I'm going to sit and listen. You know, that sounded so good, the three of you, the balance is so nice. And how do you pick tunes? Do you just off the top of your head? I mean, I sort of sometimes I go very carefully through tunes to not have two in the same key.
Oh, I used to do that too. Yeah, if there was two of them in F or two of them in C, I'd say, oh, they're going to get tired of that or...
Well,
whatever.
I think you're right. I think psychologically, like if you hear somebody playing four or five tunes and they're all in the same key. I think there's something sort of stultifying.
Well, you know Gene Austin only played in two keys. So I made 50 sides with Gene Austin.
Well, but he sang, didn't he?
Yeah. So. But he's still only doing, it's either G flat or D flat, and that was it.
That's really?
There wasn't a black key he wasn't playing.
Really?
Yeah. Well, he only played in two keys.
Well, somehow he must have managed to get by with it because...
It sure worked, didn't it?
It sure worked.
Anyway, it worked in his case. When I was a kid, I would go there to see him in the front row or whatever and just listen to him just because the guitar player They had Candy and Coco and Jane Austen.
Well, more talk and music in a minute, but first I want to let you know that my guest is Les Paul with Lou Paolo and Paul Nowinski. I'm Marion McPartland, and this is Piano Jazz, which is made possible in part by the Baldwin Piano Company, manufacturers of the pianos heard on Piano Jazz. Please play another of your trio things. Play Over the Rainbow. That would be nice.
Okay.
You know what I loved about that Over the Rainbow is the fact that you play it in the key of A. There's something about that tune. It's brighter or it's more mellow.
You know why? I think that I used to do that with Judy Garland.
Did you really?
And I believe she did it in A flat, yeah. Yeah, I did it with Judy Garland. One time we had to leave L.A., and this is early now. This is back in the 40s.
Yeah.
like 42.
Yeah.
Judy and I had to come to New York, and it took us 16 hours to fly to get from L.A.
Oh, well, why was that? Was it?
Well, we landed in Denver, and it was a bad snowstorm, and the airport had a hot-bellied stove, you know, pot-bellied stove.
Yes.
And it had a silent movie projector in there, and they played Laurel and Hardy movies.
So you stayed for 3 days? So you stayed for 3 days?
Yeah, and we were there for, I don't know, maybe 4 or 5 hours in Denver, and I think there were 8 people on the plane.
Wow.
And I remember that the roof leaked where Judy was sitting, and so they put a pan on the floor.
You don't mean in the airplane?
In the airplane, absolutely.
Oh, my God, I've never heard of anything like that.
Yeah. Well, anyway, we came to New York, and we're with Paul Whiteman, and you can imagine how it is to work with this gigantic, or this is at where Letterman is now.
Yes,
53rd
right.
53rd and Broadway.
Yes.
And imagine this giant man up there with this big baton with a light on the end of it. Looked like he was going fishing. Boy, did he scare the hell out of me, you know. You know, this reminds me of years ago when I took my trio and joined Fred Waring in New York. And Fred Waring had 65 Pennsylvanians, and he led part of them with his left hand. So that's the Glee Club, and the right hand is the orchestra. And then he had nothing left to direct the trio.
So what did he do?
And the Les Paul trio, he finally found that even if he points at us, it's not right. Because I never come in where I'm supposed to come in, and I never play what I was going to play.
Well, that's the beauty of this kind of music. You really don't have to. It's not like playing a Chopin nocturne where you have to be in that key and you have to play it at that tempo.
I whittled Fred Waring down to just time. And if it was 1 minute and 10 seconds, that you could see the sweat stop with him. Because he was under such pressure, because it's a 15-minute show and everything is clocked perfectly. He's going to have the Yankees on there. He's going to have whoever, Babe Ruth, whoever it is going to get on there and say 4 words, and he clocks it out so that everything is right on. Then when he's done with the Glee Club and everything, he points to me. And I take it, and I'm playing a song he never heard of. Nobody knows where I'm at, right?
But it all worked out, though, didn't it? I mean, time-wise, I'm sure you stuck to the time.
And it come right out 1 minute and 10 seconds, and he's happy, and we're happy.
Oh, but
so you never announced the title because it wasn't going to be that song anyway.
You know, this is all very interesting, and I'm dying to hear more. But first, I want to remind folks that my guest is Les Paul with Lou Paolo and Paul Nowinski. I'm Marian McPartland, and this is Piano Jazz. This next tune, I always thought this was a pretty tune that you do. Written by Sam Coslow. Just One More Chance. Can we play that?
Okay.
That'd be great. Thank you. I don't know. I've always had such a liking for that tune.
Reminds me of Guy Lombardo.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
But, you know, I didn't mind Guy Lombardo so much, especially since Louis Armstrong loved Guy Lombardo, didn't he? I wonder
why. Do you know what? Working so many times with Guy Lombardo. And,
you did?
And yeah.
You worked with everybody, didn't you?
Oh, that's the fortunate thing. Well, I was going to talk about Louis Armstrong, Guy Lombardo, and the one thing about the great players, including Art Tatum, was something that when some of the musicians play the day, the jazz musicians, they lose, and that's the melody. And that's the one thing, if you hear Art Tatum, he's always got that melody there, whether you know it or not. And, of course, Guy Lombardo was obvious. He never left that melody, okay? But the Louis Armstrongs always stayed there, and so did the Ellis. All the great musicians managed to stay near that melody or let you know so that you weren't completely out there.
Well, there are ways to play it with it. You don't have to be corny about it. I mean, you can play it with taste, as you indeed do. So, you know, you don't have to really...
If you can replace it with something better than the melody, that's great, isn't it?
If you can, but a lot of times you can't. You know, this is all so fascinating, and I really haven't talked about all the hit records you had. Like, you had Lover, and you had Bye Bye Blues, And perhaps the biggest one of all that you made with Mary was How High the Moon.
How High the Moon and Via Cantillas, yes.
In fact, I mean, I used to hear those things naturally all the time. They would be played all
in England?
No, by that time I was here.
Oh, you were over here.
I was actually here, Les. I didn't mean to keep stressing that I was in England, but I guess I did learn a lot of tunes there and more when I came here, of course.
Well, the World's Waiting for the Sunrise, How High the Moon, those are two songs. I remember when we made How High the Moon and Downbeat magazine came out with a headline, and it says, the national anthem is no more.
Well,
we destroyed the national anthem when we made How High the Moon. It was like the worst insult that ever happened in the jazz world, because that Lester Young, all of the great tenor players, the great horn players, whatever it is, whenever they went jamming, the first number out of the box was How High the
That's
Moon.
True.
That was the anthem.
That's true.
When Mary and I recorded that song, that was like the worst thing that could have happened to How High the Moon is have us play the melody and sing it.
Well, but the thing is, your version of it was such a tremendous hit all over the world, wasn't it?
Yes, and then the other one that I loved so much, was Ella, and when she did it in Berlin. And that was Paul Smith playing the piano, my old piano player.
Oh, really? Boy, that guy, he can really play.
Oh, I had some of the greatest musicians with my trio. Yeah, Buddy Cole, he was one of my piano players.
Terrific.
And, of course, Paul Smith and Milt Raskin. Did you ever hear Milt? Do you remember Milt Raskin?
There's one.
With
that
me?
You got me. No,
you
I don't, know
don't know Milt Raskin?
No.
He was an excellent piano player. And then if I was hard up, I would call Nat Cole, and he'd
if
come over and fill
up.
It for
Oh, my goodness.
Can you imagine having all those nice players to work with?
You know,
and now Marianne McPartland. Right?
I was just thinking, how did I get in there? But I'm very happy that I did. And it's so nice for me to get to play with you all. It's really a kick. Thank you for coming.
Well, it's our pleasure. Thank you.
And I'm going to come down to the Iridium probably and insist on sitting in.
Good.
Will you let me do that?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay. Well, let's play How High the Moon.
All right. Thank you.
fantastic.
Oh, I had a wonderful time.
You've been listening to Piano Jazz with Marian McPartland and her guest, Les Paul, with Lou Paolo and Paul Nowinski. This program was originally broadcast in 1999. Join us each week at this time for an hour of conversation and improvisation with Marian McPartland and her guests. Piano Jazz is a production of South Carolina ETV Radio. The producer is Sherry Hutchinson, recording engineer Richard Applegate, assistant recording engineer Anthony Rotolo, mastering engineer David Mitchell, production manager Audrey Shiflett. The executive producer is Tom Clark. Support for Piano Jazz was provided by the Baldwin Piano Company, Borders Books and Music, the Friends of Piano Jazz, NPR member stations, and NPR. Additional support was provided by the Lila Wallace Reader's Digest Fund and by Jazz Times Magazine, providing a window on the jazz world since 1970, on the web at jazztimes.com. Support for this Piano Jazz was provided by Mickey Bronstein, in memory of his father, Phil Bronstein, Les Paul's business manager and friend. Support for NPR comes from NPR contributors, which include the Lemelson Foundation, supporting inventors and invention to improve lives in the U.S. and developing countries, on the web at lemelson.org. And the William and Flora Hewlett Foundation, helping people build measurably better lives, on the web at hewlett.org. This is NPR.